Welcome to the Love-O Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose love has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Swami Prem Siddhena, known as Sid. Sid took sannyas in 1977 in a pub in London. Sid is an artist, designer, and teacher who shares his creativity to expand consciousness and sensitivity. He lives in Japan, holding exhibitions and teaching creativity workshops. I'm so happy to have Sid on the show, and I hope you enjoy it. Sid, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hello, Swaram. I'm looking out the window and seeing the snow falling. It's winter here in Japan, but it's very beautiful.
That sounds amazing and you make me very jealous. Here in Singapore, I'm boiling and I'm dreaming of snow.
That's great.
Okay, so to start, tell us a little bit about how you came across Osho.
I was living in London. I had a job working in the theatre. I was a designer doing sets and costumes and lighting. And it was a very interesting time for an artist, and especially for somebody of 25, that age. It was great to be having a job and actually being part of a so-called creative, dynamic life. But something was missing. And there was something really eating me out from inside. And it was by an extraordinary series of events that I met Osho. And funny enough, it was his voice that changed my life. I said I took sannyas in a pub. Well, it's true.
Okay, so can you tell us a little bit about that? Because it's quite unique circumstances.
Well, I had just been doing dynamic for the first time, and I'd done about 2 weeks of dynamic and getting up very early in the morning and going to the center, which was in Chalk Farm in London. And there I was listening to Osho for the very first time. And after a couple of weeks, we did a weekend workshop, and it was going even deeper than just doing dynamic. It was sharing and doing encounter work for the very first time, which was the kind of therapy that was happening at that time. And we all went to the pub because one of the participants had decided to take sannyas. And we're sitting in the pub, and Anisha, who is leading the workshop, she said to me, how about you? What about sannyas? And I said, well, I don't like orange very much. You know, I'm an artist and I'm not very good with orange. Anyway, she put her mala around my neck and I had a pint of beer in my hand and my arms just went up in the air and there was beer all over everybody. And that's how I took sannyas.
Very artistic way indeed. So you mentioned before, of course, you're an artist and a designer. And I understand that your work during the 20 years you spent in Pune and Oregon with Osho, because of course that moment you just described, you took sannyas and then I believe it changed your life. And I know that you had spent 20 years with Osho. So your work was always art or design. And I'm aware that you did a number of projects for the commune. So I'd love to hear if Osho commissioned any particular job for you, or what was your most fulfilling commission?
Well, from the very beginning, when I first went to Pune, you know, everybody did all kinds of work. And I learned how to mix concrete in a dress because we all wore robes. But we used to mix concrete. We put up buildings. We washed the dishes, everything. So in the very, very, very beginning, there wasn't really anything so-called artistic. But within a year, suddenly we found ourselves preparing for the very first time a Shakespeare production from the commune to take out into India. And it was, of course, being Shakespeare, a lot of English people involved because Shakespeare is, you know, classically English. And then things started to change for me. And besides doing the design for the production, I started doing some of the design around the commune, which was, interiors and the way we were building. And so it was quite early on that my work meditation, or the way I participated, was with my creativity. And of course, projects were not so particularly, they weren't so particular. They were often little bits that other people were doing. It was very much a commune. It was very much a participating energy. So my contribution was sometimes small and sometimes quite significant, but it was never very, very particular. And it wasn't really until we went to Rajneeshpuram, and we went to Oregon, that suddenly I had a role which was very particular. And that was the designing and the laying out of the city. And, of course, these things I'd never done before. I'd done theater, but I'd never done anything like planning a city. And that involved designing buildings, laying out roads, and all kinds of things. Of course, it was a very complex and very, unique project. It was vast. It was making a city in the desert. It was truly a lotus coming out of the mud.
Great. I mean, that's one of the things that is too often not really spoken about, how a bunch of guys like you all of a sudden found yourself in the middle of a desert and you managed to build a fully functional, high-tech and very advanced city. Can you tell us something about that particular challenge? How did you go about it?
Well, I think this was probably for everybody. You got up in the morning and there was something that needed to be done, and it was something that was bigger than you, and all you could do is take one step at a time. And that was not just a question of, which ditch to dig or which pipe to put in the ground, but it was like we were developing something that was, I think, very futuristic. It was very simple on one level, but it was totally in tune with the vision of, an eco-city. It was totally a vision of community living. It was a vision on so many levels. And, as a designer, you really take what is in front of you and you do something which, in some cases, I'd never done before, which was planning and all the issues around planning, where you're working with the city planners, you're working with the local community, you're working with the state, and of course there are many aspects of that which went wrong or went right, but in the end, it was an extraordinary experience for each individual, and sometimes. I was up in the hills cutting trees to build check dams. And at the same time, then I would go back to my office and I'd sit down and I'd start building or start designing the landscaping for the hotel. It was so multidimensional that even though we had roles to play, everybody was involved all the time on so many levels.
You brought life where previously was desert. We should really give you credit for that and also take it as an example of how you can channel energy to create life. So, I just want to commend you, all of you, for doing that. So let's talk a little bit about art and creativity. So normally art is associated with creativity and people think of artists as creative people, but I understand that you differentiate between art and creativity. So can you explain what's the difference between creativity as you learn it from Osho and art?
One of the things that Osho said that struck me to the very core is that the highest intelligence is a creative response to now. And what I got from that, being an artist, was, of course, my focus went initially onto the word creative. But it was such a distillation of his vision and of creativity. And it showed me that it wasn't about the result. It was about the process. It was about how you respond to life. And if you respond creatively, the moment is a magical moment. And for me, I had to really let go of art in order to discover creativity in that wider sense that Osho explained and offered us. And in that understanding, I began to see that life is not only the teacher, but life is the possibility. And creating and responding creatively to that life brings you to the now every single moment. Being an artist, of course, everything has a magic in a certain kind of way, but it's not exclusive to an artist. And in a way, life is the art, and that is Osho's mystery and sharing.
Wow, this is so inspiring because, you know, it makes me feel that even though I'm stuck in an office, I can be an artist and I can be creative as long as I am responding to the moment, which is quite a challenge, but...
I totally get it, yes. And I think that what I'm able to do now is to share that, and how to share that and how to translate this idea of creativity and of art, which is an expression or part one expression of creativity, how to share that so that people can find that in the moment and find that in what seems to be mundane, but in fact is an extraordinary possibility. And I think that the way we all have lived in the commune and the way Osho has showed us is that the moment and is the potential. It's up to you.
That's wonderful. And we'll talk a little bit more about the workshop you offer and what you teach. But for now, let's stay with you and Osho. So I'd love to hear if you can give me an example of how meeting Osho changed your work as an artist.
It's a very good question. I said just now that I had to let go of art. And when I first sat in front of him, when I first arrived in Pune, I sat in front of him and I said, I have so many ideas, so many visions. And he said, don't worry, leave that to me. And then very soon after that, there I was mixing concrete. There I was doing very ordinary things, washing the pots, washing the pans. And I had to really let go of my idea about being an artist to find what I could only call was something authentic, because it's easy to be educated in anything. You can be educated in art, but ultimately you have to go right into the core of things in yourself and empty yourself out. And I think that that's how I discovered a new kind of art in myself. It was nothing to do with the things I'd learned. It was to do with the creative response to now.
I know this is very difficult, but if possible, can you give me an example of a work you did in the commune where you applied this process that you just described?
In Pune now, there's a beautiful park which is connected to the commune, the resort. And that park was rather like the desert in Oregon. It was totally abused. I think we counted there were 12 trees growing there when we first started that project. And any life that was there was eaten down by the goats every day, and the water running down the stream was completely polluted by the railway. And I found myself one day being asked to do some illustrations of sort of Zen gardens with the idea that we were going to try and persuade Pune government to allow us to make a park. And I just did some sketches. And then there were the sketches. They were mounted and they were in a display. And I thought that was the end of it. And then the next day, I was told that I was going to design the park. Well, I had not designed a park before. And I found myself designing Japanese gardens in the middle of India, setting rocks, laying out walkways, placing bamboo groves, choosing the trees, setting the way the water moved. Of course, I was part of a team, and that team was an extraordinary team of people who understood water, they understood soil, people who were really dedicated to the, let's say, the practical aspects of it. There I was designing something which I hadn't designed before, but the sensibility that I had developed through meditation started to flower in this extraordinary project. And I think that it lasted about 2 years. We developed it very, very quickly. And at one point, the monsoons came and washed most of it away. And then we had to start again. But it was a moment where I think my creativity found a place in not just art, but in the commune. It seemed to flower in that project. Even though I had done a lot of things in Oregon, somehow this was a gift that came for many of us. But speaking personally, it was where many aspects of my past and my present suddenly came together in one particular project.
Oh, that's amazing to hear. Is the park still there in Pune?
It very much is. I think that the city enjoys it now much more than just the people who come to the resort. I think it's probably changed a lot. I haven't seen it for a while. Gardens change. We planted probably too many trees out of exuberance. And because there'd only been 12 in the first place, we needed to make that very different. And so I think it changes. And I think that like anything, creativity is only the beginning. You give birth to something and then it changes by itself. It evolves. And I think that the commune in Rajneeshpuram probably has a completely different now. It's owned by different people. Different things happen there. But the seeds that we planted were not just literally seeds that we put in the ground. They were, I believe, seeds that flower in everybody who lived there. And I think it's the same with us who, when we made the park, we planted seeds in ourselves as well as in the ground.
That's such a beautiful metaphor and very meaningful. So because I've been there, I think you refer, is the park which is just behind, out of the perimeter of the commune, and it's just behind the back gate of the resort. Is that the park that you're talking about?
I am, yes. And part of the resort complex faces onto that, so you can actually enjoy the feeling and the energy of the park right next to the resort, even though it's separate.
And I definitely, I remember me sitting on a bench at the back of the resort, overlooking the park, and then actually walking into the park, and yes. It's so amazing and beautiful. And in fact, I'm going to Pune in a week time, and this time I'm gonna go to the park and I will connect with you, and I think, you know, you are the guy who designed this place, and it's so beautiful.
It was an extraordinary project. I just wanted to come back to what you were talking about, which was how work was never really work when we in the commune. It was something else. At one point, it was called worship. But it was so much to do with creativity. Even though I was the one who did the drawings for the park, those who cooked the food, those who made the croissants, everything had a flavor, a creative flavor, which I think is where Osho's vision of meditation was so much more than just a technique or a process. It was how you lived the moment. And I think that that's something that people feel now through the environment of the resort. And I think that that's what I hope people who taste that can find it again in their own lives. And it's not a question of being making big statements. It's not a question of being successful with creativity. It's just the way you set the table. It's just the way you go for a walk. And this is very, very Zen, I think. And I find myself in Japan, which is a very aesthetic country and very steeped in that idea that your daily practice and your aesthetics are just the way you live your life. And I think that that is how art and creativity in Osho's vision translates now into the moment.
And I think that's the magic of living with a master. It's this quality of meditation throughout the whole day. And as you just described beautifully, and I don't want to repeat that, but it's this quality of presence. And it's not just the hour of meditation technique, which is definitely useful and to help us get there, but it's the environment of highly state of awareness, which is brought by an enlightened master. And so it's great that you guys had the chance to live that and you can transmit it today. And the way you absorb that and you can translate it and you can, you know, articulate that, to me, it's mind-blowing and it's beautiful. So the next question I'd like to ask you is about a little episode that you had with Osho. So a year before Osho left his body, you were invited to sit in his dining area and make a drawing from a Buddha statue on the table. Can you tell us a bit more about that particular experience and what you learned from it?
You know, I was invited with Padma, who was my partner then. We just arrived back in Pune, and we were invited to go into and sit in his little dining area, which was connected or just next to his the room where he spent his time. And we had some paper and some pencils, and there was a beautiful Buddha head in which sat in the middle of the table, carved in some deep green stone. And it was a very small, little, intimate place where he had his meals, and he had a window, and it looked out to the roses that he loved. And we started sketching and drawing, and I really don't know how long we were there. And I remember the drawing I did, because I still have it. It wasn't a very good drawing. But there was something about, for me, his presence was very, very close. It was just on the other side of the wall. And the fact that I was drawing and that he was there while I was drawing was such a blessing, because his presence was so loving in that moment. And the feeling of where I'm so at home and so absorbed in myself when I'm drawing, and that he could be there or I could be there doing that with him, was an intimacy which I had never ever had before with him. There'd been times when I was close to him physically, and you know, he gave me energy and the energy darshans and many other things, but there was an intimacy and a quietness and a very something so simple and so indescribable, actually. And then his secretary came in to the room. She had a huge smile on her face, and she said, "Well, I hope that was fun for you." And we all left. And then later, we were called back to the office, and she said, "I've got a gift from Osho for you." And it was a little wooden statue, which you could buy in MG Road. You could go and anywhere you could get these little wooden statues. They were like a wandering sadhu. They were probably made in some village somewhere, and they were sweet, but they weren't very skilled or they weren't very special. And the message that came with this little statue was, this is what not to draw. Now, that's a very Zen statement after you've sat with him and doing a drawing. And then comes the message, this is what not to draw. So that experience was very Zen for me. It was truly a transmission and something I will never forget.
I'd love to hear from you if that experience that you had in that particular moment where Osho was in the body and you were drawing in his presence, absence, because he was there just behind the wall. You couldn't see him, but you knew that he was there. And today, Osho left his body. Osho is no more here physically. Do you feel that in your life you had that experience again after Osho left his body?
I think his presence is his teaching. I think that discovery, or that, let's say, that affirmation, because, you know, we didn't see him all the time in all those years that I have spent with him, we didn't see him. Sometimes he drove past in a Rolls Royce. Sometimes we only heard about how he was enjoying his food, or it was stories. But when you feel the presence and you start to let it really, really fill you and really saturate you, it never goes away. It manifests differently. It manifests sometimes in a moment that you are living your life. Sometimes it's a sweetness that you taste when your eyes are closed, but it's always there. And I think that last moment, which was, I think, a few months after that, he left his body. But I never felt any separation after that. And I think that the quality of presence is something that, first of all, we learn from him, but then we begin to taste our own presence, and we feel presence as the meditation of the moment. So yes, my answer is yes, yes. He is here. He is very present.
Beautiful. Well, thank you for that. So let's talk now about your work and somehow how you translate all that you have learned from Osho, imbibed from Osho, into your daily activity and your work. I'm aware you offer a number of workshops in Japan where you live, which, you know, listening to what you describe, you have like a link to the Zen tradition, and it's not by chance probably that you ended up living in Japan. So can you give us a little overview on the type of workshops you offer?
I just want to go back a little bit just to tie this in. In Pune, I was part of a program which we call the Quality of Life. It was a three-week program where you learned or you discovered how to integrate meditation into your life. And it was for people who hadn't really tasted the communion in the depth that I had, but it was something that we could certainly share in some kind of way. And I brought the creativity dimension to that program, which was called the Quality of Life. And without actually making a particular attempt to bring that name, the work I do now is called a Creative Vision for Life. And even though the workshops are quite quite specifically to do with painting, that painting is really just the way to open up wonder. It's a way to open up yourself to the possibilities of living your life creatively. Art is basically a lot of fun, and that's my intention, is to open doors for people who, you know, have to live a life which is often very, very forced into, you know, patterns of work and ideas about careers and all those kind of things. And creativity is such a refreshing change to that. So by calling it Creative Vision for Life, I really want the creativity and the art making to be a tool to discovering the creative response to now, going back to Osho's words. And I think, being an artist, I obviously love to make art, and that's another part of my life. But it's really, again, to somehow share Osho, or let's say meditation, or let's say presence in art, because art, it tends to be these days very, very strange. It's very much to do with society. It's very much to do with effect. It's very much to do with drama. It's very much to do with making statements rather than going in. And I hope that the art I make, and it seems to be so, the Japanese people respond to that art because they know how to go in. And I think art really has its place ultimately, because that's where its roots are, in how to go in, how to feel your space, inside space, and how to bring that inside space into your life.
And I think that the work you do is very relevant and meaningful, especially considering that, you know, you are in Japan, where There is certainly an old tradition of Buddhism and Zen, even though in the last, in the modern world, it's notoriously a place where there is a lot of pressure on career and work, and there is not much balance between, you know, work and personal life. So I hope, I'm sure that people who come to your workshop benefit from that. So I'd love to hear, what are your latest projects, if you're working on anything in particular?
Well, I've put all of this into a book. And the book hopefully will be, it's written and it's going through an editorial process right now. And I really somehow, you know, it's a very difficult thing to put down in words, especially because I'm not really a writer. But, you know, after many years of doing these workshops, certain things have become clear that really help people. And I've chosen the title Creative Being Creative and Creative Being the same thing. In other words, by living a creative life, you discover being. And by being, you become a vehicle for creativity. And it's full of exercises, it's full of great things to do, as well as little anecdotes which have come out of the workshops. And so I'll send you a copy as soon as it's ready. That's really a big project for me. It's been taken 5 or 6 years to put that together. The workshops are really where I put most of my energy. And I am now beginning to do projects which are not only for the individual, but for a group of people. So even though groups happen because lots of people gather together and we do particular workshop structures, but at the same time, I feel that we are now at a point in the planet and a point in our evolution that we need to really find creativity that links everybody together. And I think that one of the things that Osho, he gave me this crazy name, which turns out to be a girl's name rather than a boy's name. But that feminine aspect for me has been really, really important because I've discovered that fulfillment comes in the process. A piece of art is what comes out of the process, but that's not really where the fulfillment is. The fulfillment is in the process of making the art. And I think that we don't need to be so fixated on where we're going. We need to bring our attention into how we're moving, how we take those steps. And then life, the quality of life, coming back to that word, is fulfilling there, here, right now, in the moment.
Where people can find you if they want to know more about you and your activities or get in touch with you?
Well, I've got a couple of websites and you can connect with me there. Creative Vision for Life is one of them, but the other one is my siddart.com, where I have my art and show my work and make announcements there. I'm also very available on social media, so lots of different ways, and maybe we can post those as part of the podcast information.
Yeah, definitely. I'll link all your social media links and website in the show notes, so if everyone is interested, they can find you there.
Yeah, certainly.
Okay, so we are heading towards the end, and I've got three final questions for you. The first one is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
A good cup of tea is very important. Being an Englishman, it's usually English tea, even though I do love Japanese tea these days. You know, I certainly sit in the morning, maybe for half an hour or an hour. Sometimes I play Osho, his discourses. That's really how I start. I think I go to my studio in the afternoon, and I do that whether I'm going to paint or not. And I really feel that that routine of going to my studio, it really gives me a grounding. Sometimes I walk in and I take my coat off and I sit. Sometimes I walk in and I don't take my coat off. I go straight to the piece of work that I was working on the day before. So it changes. But something like that works for me, that I can do something every day. And I remember Osho saying that You don't need a church. You don't need a temple. You just need to sit. And sometimes it's good to sit in the same place every day. Find a place in your home or where you feel settled, maybe in nature, but something where you go back, because it slowly that routine builds a familiarity. It builds an intimacy with that place, and it becomes part of your sitting or part of your practice. And so I really find that my studio, and in my book I call it my inner studio as well as the outer studio, is something that everybody can do. And you're sitting in your most favorite chair, it doesn't really matter. Whatever it is, that where you settle in and you go in and you taste yourself, you taste the presence.
Okay, so the second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
Well, creativity is my meditation, but I understand your question. I think the breathing is where I settle. I find that walking is also very, very important for me. And being present in walking is a very Zen practice. And there are certain things that you can do where you can actually facilitate meditation by walking. It's not only going for a nice stroll and looking around you. It is how you take your steps and how you align yourself. And it brings the centering. So I think that walking and breathing are probably the two things that I naturally go to these days. Having practiced many other things over the years, they seem to have condensed into those two things.
The last question is, you lead the OSH experiment. You were one of the pioneers in this movement of creating a new man, Zorba the Buddha. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2019?
I think it's Osho now. I think that all the understanding that we have received comes down to living in the moment. It sounds so easy to say that, but it's not just the moment where we practice anything like religion or meditation. It's not something where we have to live our lives and make a career and look after, you know, the everyday. It's a total picture. It is a total coming together of our totality. And that is so unique. And I think that each person has their own quality. And that quality is something that we must really respect. And it may not be clear yet for some people. And I think that there's so much information coming to us on a social level, even on a spiritual level, that it's so difficult to sort it all out. It's so difficult to make sense of it. And it's easy to get pulled into one direction, another, the latest thing, the latest trend, whether it's in a meditation technique or whether it's in a lifestyle technique. It's so difficult to sort it all out. And we just have to keep coming back in and feeling this quality that is natural to us. Osho's always told us that meditation is a natural quality. All we have to do is remember it. And each person will find and can find that in that going in, and each person can find the quality of and the possibility of going out. For me, it is creative life and it is creative being. And that's why I tried to pull those two things together in the book.
Thank you so much for sharing your wonderful insights. And it's been a real pleasure talking to you. So we reached the end of the show. And I think, you know, I've learned a lot. And it's been like amazing to hear how you managed to articulate the creative process that by definition is something very difficult to put into words. But, you know, you have this ability not just to being a great artist and get into the creative flow, but also to explain it. And I think that you are an amazing representation of Osho's teaching when it comes to, you know, living creatively in the present. So, well, thank you so much.
Swaram, thank you for your kind words. Anyway, I just wanted to say that creativity for me is the nature of all things. So here we are.
Okay, so on this wonderful note and this beautiful quote from Sid, we can end this show. And thank you so much again. Lots of love and a big hug.
Big hug and hello to everybody.
Bye now.
Thank you for listening to the Love of Show podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit loveoshow.com for new episodes, blogs,
and much more.